well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Let's get right to it. Big news on Capitol Hill. The budget negotiations continue with Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill. We are expected to have the House Rules Committee start to mark up his portion of the reconciliation bill. I think they're scheduled to meet at 1 a.m. Wednesday morning. It's going to take hours and hours to go through this bill. And as we were talking with NRA ILA Executive Director John Comerford last week, after the House Ways and Means Committee approved their portion of the budget, which zeroes out the transfer tax on suppressors, but keeps suppressors on the National Firearms Act as restricted items. Doesn't do anything to reduce the tax on short-barreled firearms. There are efforts underway to expand the language that was included by the House Ways and Means Committee. And the Rules Committee is the best vehicle to do that. So on Friday, the House Budget Committee rejected the reconciliation bill. There were negotiations over the weekend. The bill ended up passing out of the budget committee. I think it was early Monday morning, late Sunday night. I think it was early Monday morning. After several members of the House Republican caucus voted present, they weren't on board with all of the changes. They want to see more changes done, including some of the changes related to suppressors and short-barreled firearms. But they allowed that bill to proceed to the Rules Committee, knowing that there are going to continue to be discussions, and there have been discussions ongoing. In fact, President Donald Trump getting involved in those discussions now. But I wanted to bring in one of those representatives who is working to expand the language regarding suppressors and include language zeroing out taxes on short-barreled firearms. In fact, again, maybe getting rid of those items from the auspices of the National Firearms Act completely. Representative Andrew Clyde from Georgia, not only a member of Congress, but he is a federally licensed firearms dealer, so he knows a thing or two about these issues. Also sits on the House Budget Committee and is in a great position, I think, to talk about the negotiations to date and where things go from here. So without any further ado, let's bring on the Congressman and get right to it. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us on the program today. It is so good to see you again.
Cam, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know that this is a very busy week there on Capitol Hill. I don't know how much sleep you're getting. It looks like it's going to be another late night for the Rules Committee, maybe an early morning. Let's get right to it here. You are one of those who are advocating for more benefits, quite frankly, to gun owners, right? When it comes to suppressors, when it comes to short-barreled firearms, you want to see this reconciliation bill improved in a number of ways.
Well, actually, what I'm advocating for is a restoration of our constitutional rights. That's the whole point right there. We've got an issue now. In fact, for the last 90 years, we have been suffering under the draconian National Firearms Act, which taxes a constitutional right. Now, think about it. We have a $400 short shotgun. It has a $200 tax on it. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. You know, in 1819, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Marshall, said the power to tax includes the power to destroy. If you can tax something, you can destroy it. So if you can tax a constitutional right, then you can destroy that constitutional right. You can raise the tax so high that people cannot afford to pay it, and therefore they have no constitutional right. So is it really a constitutional right? It's not. Not if you can tax it. So this is a perfect opportunity with this reconciliation bill to eliminate the taxation of an unalienable constitutional right, which should not be there in the first place. But, you know, it's there. So we've got to do something to get rid of it. And this is the perfect opportunity. We can do that for suppressors, $200 tax stamp on the transfer and making tax. We can do that on short barrels. Short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, and AOWs, any other weapons, also that are short barrels. so we should be able to do this because we don't need any Democrat votes in the Senate. We can bypass the filibuster through budget reconciliation. And eliminating the taxation is the perfect fit for budget reconciliation, because in order to pass what's called the Byrd rule in the Senate, which is a measure of, is it policy or is it, you know, is it taxing? Well, this is taxing. So if you remove the tax, then you can include, or if the bill removes the tax, then it is correct to include it in the bill. And we can eliminate the Senate filibuster, so we can do this with only Republican votes. It should be a no-brainer for folks here in Congress to do this.
It should be. And yet, as things stand right now, the language of the reconciliation bill only includes dropping that $200 tax for transfer tax on suppressors. So, Representative Clyde, where is the hangup?
You know, that's the question I've been asking leadership. So everybody that hears your voice right now and sees what you're doing and hears me needs to be calling our leadership, calling their representatives and saying, hey, we want you to eliminate the tax on suppressors and short barrels. That's as clean as it gets right there. Eliminate that tax and restore our constitutional rights, you know, that have been denied us for the last 90 years, 90 plus years. And so this is the time to do it. What's in the bill right now, you're correct, is only eliminating the transfer tax on suppressors, not the making tax. And so the Form 4 tax, but not the Form 1 tax. And then you also have the registration that has to be dealt with, because the database, the registration database, is a database of the tax. When you the two go together. If you eliminate the tax, there's no foundation for the database. All right. And so that's the whole point right there. And we need to do that. We need to eliminate it. I'm working hard to ensure that we get rid of both the making and transfer tax of suppressors and eliminate the registration, so it is no longer a National Firearms Act weapon. And I'm also doing that for short barrels as well. We've got more progress on suppressors than we do on short barrels, but we need both right now.
What, if you don't mind me asking, I mean, what are you hearing from leadership? Because I know that you sit on the Rules Committee, right?
I'm on the budget.
On the budget committee, excuse me. Yes. And you were one of those who voted present because you were not satisfied with the current language of the reconciliation bill. So what conversations can you tell us that you've had with leadership? And do you feel like progress is being made?
Well, I think progress is being made on suppressors. All right. We've had conversations, you know, asking of leadership. Number one, if you're going to do the transfer tax, you've got to do the making tax and you've got to do the registration, because doing one without the other two just doesn't make sense and really is kind of a quarter of a win. It's not a win, or not a full win at all, because suppressors still stay as a restricted firearm within the National Firearms Act, because you still have the making tax on them. So that's a big issue right there. I think I'm cautiously optimistic that we will gain that win. All right. Haven't seen the text yet. So until we actually see the text, all right, then and they agree to that text, then as leadership says, nothing is for sure right now. Anything in what's called a manager's amendment. That manager's amendment will be voted on in rules. So I'm at 1 a.m. tomorrow morning. So I'm expecting to see that manager's amendment sometime late this afternoon or early this evening. So we are continuing to advocate for having suppressors and short barrels in the manager's amendment. And my present vote was to send a signal that we're not there yet. And my vote's not there yet. You know, we need to get this Second Amendment issue into the manager's amendment in order for my vote to be there with them.
I was going to say, is that a red line for you then on the reconciliation bill as a whole?
Well, I haven't drawn any red lines just yet, but it's a possibility. It certainly is.
Okay. And again, I mean, as you say, the Rules Committee going to be meeting, excuse me, starting at 1 a.m. Wednesday morning. I guess my next question is, are members of Congress listening? If I call up Representative McGuire, who's my representative right now, is his office going to take notice at this late date, at this late hour, that I'm advocating to get this manager's amendment that includes language to repeal the both taxes regarding suppressors, to take the taxes and registration out of short-barreled rifles and shotguns?
Well, I think that that he certainly should. I mean, we still have time. The amendment is not final. So, you know, until probably middle of the evening, I don't expect the text to be final. So I would absolutely ask people, call your representative. You know, you call your representative and say, you need to tell the speaker's office that I want to see short barrels removed from the National Firearms Act, the taxation. Say it this way. I want the taxation gone from suppressors and short barrels, both. That's what needs to happen. This is really our only opportunity to do this. And the president, I believe, will have no issue with signing the bill with that. It will be a massive win for the Second Amendment community. I don't believe any president other than Donald Trump can actually do this if he'll engage on it. But I believe he would certainly sign it. So we need to be aggressive, need to be proactive, and we need to encourage leadership and not give up until it's in the manager's amendment.
Yeah. You know, when I asked, where is the hangup here? Have you heard, I mean, are there specific members of Congress who have said that they'll balk if this language is included in the bill?
Well, you have some moderates, and you can kind of guess who they are.
Yeah.
That just are not Second Amendment advocates at all. All right. But they can be persuaded. And I've had conversations with some of them individually. And, you know, I just want to educate them. I mean, if you look at a shockwave, a Mossberg shockwave, okay, you know, it's slightly over 26 inches in length. If it has the hourglass pistol grip on it, then it's just a firearm. It's a handheld, smoothbore pistol, basically. But if you put a vertical pistol grip on the back that makes it shorter than 26 inches, it's now an AOW. All right. If you take a pistol, you know, a regular AR-15 pistol, and you add a brace to it, well, within the current rule that has not yet been struck down completely, you now have a unregistered short barrel rifle, which is completely wrong. And so it makes no sense. And I'll tell you that that leadership actually understands that. But we have some folks that needs to be brought to their attention. And I'm working very hard to do that with these people.
Yeah.
Bring it to their attention and to educate them that they don't, these are not weapons that you get traces on. And these are not weapons that need to be part of the National Firearms Act with a $200 tax stamp on them.
Absolutely. And I mean, listen, I know the argument about optics, and I know, you know, the argument, well, Democrats are going to say this is a gift to criminals. They say that for any piece of legislation that enhances or protects our Second Amendment rights. We cannot base our votes. We cannot base our positions on the lies and the disinformation that's going to come from folks who want to strip us of our constitutionally protected rights.
That's correct. You're 100% spot on, Cam. I mean, this is an issue that should not be a problem for all Republicans. You know, we campaign on this. Well, let's advocate for it then. You know, be strong and stand for the Second Amendment. The amount of, you know, the actual amount of tax that is paid on short-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns is not a drop in the bucket. It's not even a rounding error compared to, you know, $7 trillion government budget and a $2 trillion deficit. It's a very, very, very small amount of money, and it would be a massive win for our constitutional rights.
Well, absolutely. And I hope we get there. Representative Clyde, again, thank you so much for joining me today. Can we have you back on the program when the dust has settled and we see what this bill actually looks like?
Yes, you can. I would be happy to be back on the program after the dust has settled and the president has signed the bill, or at least it's past the House. Absolutely. Happy to.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for joining us today, Representative Clyde. Thank you for all your work in trying to make this bill as strong as possible when it comes to our Second Amendment rights, and look forward to talking to you again in the very near future.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
My thanks to Representative Clyde for joining us on the program. And again, now is the time, and there is no time to wait here in making your voice heard. Your representative, and to a certain extent now your senator too, but I would focus your attention right now on your congressional representative. They need to be hearing from you. about the importance of, again, expanding the language, not only on suppressors, but on short-barreled firearms within the reconciliation bill itself. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of, where was this? Michigan, Mount Morris Township, Michigan. Teen in Mount Morris Township shootout, sentenced to probation. 19-year-old Cordell Allen will spend the next year and a half on probation after he pleaded guilty in April to carrying a concealed weapon without a permit. He has to pay about $200 in court costs and fines as well. The judge in this case ordered Allen to get a job of at least 30 hours a week as part of his sentence. In exchange, prosecutors dropped two counts of assault with intent to murder and another weapons charge in exchange for his guilty plea. Investigators say that Allen, along with 19-year-old Amarian Kane, and others were riding in an SUV that pulled up to a home in Mount Morris Township on June 25th of last year. There was a physical fight that broke out with someone who was in the yard, which then escalated into a shootout. Someone in the yard, someone in the SUV, both firing shots. Police found 17-year-old Kamani Lindsay, who was one of those who showed up in the SUV, in the middle of the road with gunshot wounds. He was pronounced dead from his injuries. Another 17-year-old located behind a vehicle was taken to an area hospital for treatment of gunshot wounds to an arm and a leg. Amarian Kane remains charged with one count of open murder, two counts of attempted murder, and four weapons charges related to the shootout. According to ABC 12 in Michigan, he was sent to the Michigan Center for Forensic Psychiatry in January of this year to undergo mental competency testing. Results came back last month. And Kane's attorney requested a second opinion, so apparently he was deemed competent to stand trial. There is a hearing scheduled for early next month to review those results, showing whether or not Kane understands the charges and is able to participate in his defense. But again, one of his alleged accomplices, Cordell Allen, has resolved his criminal case. Two counts, again, of assault with intent to murder dropped for a single possessory charge of carrying a concealed weapon without a permit, 36 months probation, $200 in court fees and fines, and Allen is on his merry way. Oh, and he's got to get a job, too. Yeah. Unless there were some serious evidentiary issues here, I don't understand why prosecutors offered such a sweetheart deal to somebody who is, again, originally accused of committing a violent crime with a firearm, and is now, again, pleaded guilty to a mere possessory charge. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Santa Monica, California, where a robbery suspect was fatally shot at a shoe store. Apparently, there was an after-hours sale. A customer had talked with the store owner, and I guess said, you know, hey, my buddy wants to come in and buy some shoes, but he can't come in during your normal business hours. You mind sticking around? So it was a Sunday night, about 9:30. Santa Monica Police Department responding to the 1300 block of the 3rd Street Promenade, which is a big shopping district. They got there within 2 minutes of the initial call of an assault with a deadly weapon. They found an injured man who had been shot. According to a preliminary investigation, the Westside Current newspaper reports that the store owner had agreed to meet a quote, known associate for the private after-hours sale. During that meeting, a second man allegedly conspired with the associate, then entered the closed business and pepper sprayed the store owner. In response, the owner, who police said legally possessed a firearm, shot the intruder. The suspect taken to a local hospital, he later passed away from his injuries. The associate, identified as a 41-year-old Karen Malikian, arrested at the scene and has been charged with homicide, armed robbery, and conspiracy. The business owner, not injured, described as cooperating with detectives. Investigators with the Santa Monica PD says the incident appears to have been targeted and involved individuals who knew one another. There is no ongoing threat to the public, according to the Santa Monica Police Department. No word on whether or not the store owner possessed a valid carry permit or whether he was simply possessing a firearm in his business. But I did a little bit of research for this because I wrote up a story at BearingArms.com. And found that in Santa Monica, California, it's going to cost you about $1,000 to get a 2-year permit to carry a firearm in self-defense. which is not the worst in California, but it is up there. There are, you know, not every jurisdiction is charging four figures, and it's basically $700 in government fees, then $150 psychological evaluation. The mandated training to acquire a concealed carry permit is going to run you about another $150. So, again, you're looking at $1,000 to exercise a fundamental right in Santa Monica, which to me seems designed to prevent people from exercising the right to carry, creating a target-rich environment in which individuals like, well, the perpetrators of this particular crime may very well have good reason to believe that their intended victims will be unarmed and helpless and unable to protect themselves. Thankfully, that was not the case in this particular incident. But again, that's an outlier. And lawmakers in both Sacramento and locally in Santa Monica are doing everything they can to prevent these types of defensive gun uses and to embolden violent criminals. All right, finally today, on to our good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Owensboro, Kentucky, who just happened to be right there on the scene when a 62-year-old man suffered a cardiac event there on the Owensboro riverfront. 62-year-old Tim Mulligan, back on May 11th, it's about 5:30 in the afternoon, collapsed there while he was out on a walk with his wife, Donna. A guy named Jacob Ranson, who just happened to be nearby, ran over to help. First, he called 911. Then he started administering CPR. Dispatchers were telling him, you know, here's what you do, because I don't think Ranson knew how to perform CPR. So he's following the advice of the dispatchers. Ranson said he had gone to the riverfront with his wife and newborn child. They'd been stuck inside the house for several days. And he said, I heard a thud. And I turned around and he was lying face down on the ground. He wasn't breathing. He was purple. So they asked me if I knew CPR, talking about the dispatchers. I said no, but they walked me through it. And I just kept going until the EMTs took over. According to Ranson, the paramedics arrived pretty quickly. Were able to use an automated external defibrillator to restore Mulligan's heartbeat. He was placed on a ventilator, admitted to Owensboro Hospital, where he was in critical condition for over 24 hours. According to the Owensboro Times, doctors later diagnosed Mulligan with a ventricular fibrillation arrest, which causes the heart to stop beating effectively. So he received a surgical implanted defibrillator and is expected now to make a full recovery. His wife, Donna, told the paper, cardiologist said immediate CPR saved his life. She said, we've always walked that path near the fountains on the weekends, and Jacob just happened to be there that day. We call it divine intervention. Tim Mulligan says he owes his life to his wife and to Jacob, calling Ranson his angel. So the whole thing was a miracle, and I give all the glory to God. The two families actually reunited in the hospital, and according to the Owensboro Times, they plan to stay in touch, talking about getting together for dinner. When Mulligan gets out of the hospital, Tim Mulligan said, when I finally met him, we hugged, he cried. He was just so relieved. We are definitely friends now. And Jacob Ranson, who works in the distillery business, in no formal medical training, said that this was a life-changing experience for him. He said, it was all a blur, but I knew I had to do something. You never know when you'll be the one in that moment. I believe that I was put in the right place at the right time. So there you go. I happen to agree. But again, it wasn't just about being there. It was about being willing to step up, right? Not just the right place at the right time, but willing and able to do the right thing as well. And Jacob Ranson, we thank you for your very good and life-saving deed there on the Owensboro waterfront. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Now, I mentioned yesterday we were going to have Cody Wisniewski from FPC Action Foundation on the show, but his internet crapped out. So I actually did talk with Cody earlier today. We'll share that interview with you tomorrow. I got to tell you, it's a fascinating conversation. Not only about Cody's recent piece of the Washington Examiner on why obliterating the ATF doesn't actually address the underlying issues here, but a fascinating discussion about a case dealing with the right to carry in the state of Texas and the bizarre argument deployed by Texas Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton to throw this lawsuit out of court. So I'd encourage you to check out that conversation with Cody Wisniewski tomorrow on Barry and Arms Cam and Company. Would also encourage you to check out BarryandArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We've got a gun storage mandate that is on the move in Maine. We've got more legal updates for you as well, including an FPC challenge to a gun-free zone in the Empire State of New York, and much more. So be sure to check it out again at BarryandArms.com. If you like what you see, would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your savings. You'll get all kinds of benefits at every tier of support. But no matter which tier you choose, you will be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing in Bearing Arms. And for that, we are exceedingly grateful. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. I'll be on a Newsmax with Carl Higbee this afternoon. But I will see you back here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Until then, be well. Be safe and be free.